chicken fried, and cold beer on a Friday night, a pair of jeans that fit just right, and the radio.
So if you think about it, we have a gulf and we have a lake. Now all we need is an ocean. So maybe we'll have to change the name of the Atlantic and or the Pacific. Maybe we'll change them both.
Good grief. All right, well, here we go. This is a conversation I really don't want to have, but, you know, I really like Jimmy Patronis. We get along well. I think of us as friends. But I got to be the journalist because, come on, man. You're filing the bill to rename Lake Ontario to Lake America. Why, Jimmy, why?
A lot of this, at least in my opinion, is I think it's important to give the president as much leverage as possible in negotiations. So, look, I think there's things that he does that he throws out. Let's see if it sticks to the wall. But you know what? When he does it, no matter what, there's going to be those that react in a way that is going to be in the favor of what the end game that the president is trying to get. In this particular case, it's just hitting a reset button on the tariff related economics between us and Canada. So, again, I think it's important when the president has something that he's trying to negotiate. There's a lot of under the surface things aren't being discussed. The biggest one is steel between us and Canada. With what the president has done, it has really helped U.S. productivity with steel. And to me, those are real types of jobs that we are fighting to keep in our country as opposed to export them. So, again, I'm playing a supporting role, at least attempting to help them in the negotiations.
Okay, but how is us in a seemingly super petty, doesn't seem to have any impact on Canada, renaming for Google Maps purposes on our side of the water when we look at it on Google Maps? How does that create leverage for us with Canada? All the other stuff, I'm with you. I'm totally with you, and I want to give the president as much leverage as possible.
What are we doing right now? We're talking about it, okay? But you know what they're doing in Canada? They're talking about it. It's allowing that bubbling up of questions, of anger, of interest, of concern, of negotiating. It's just part of creating a noise to help create an ultimate reaction. Again, it's how this president operates. I like the way he operates. I like what he uses leverage in order to win for the American public. That's exactly what he's done. He has done something to just drive Canadians crazy. And if they're wearing out their leadership, then ultimately that's helping the president's negotiations, in my opinion.
All right, let's talk about Jelly Roll. He goes on Kimmel. He makes some jokes about the president. He makes jokes about the president, which is what Jimmy Kimmel would have done if he'd have been there. And your response is, I don't want Jelly Roll in Florida. He's not welcome on I-10. In my mind, somebody making jokes about the president is right in the center of the First Amendment, and I am perfectly fine with having people disagree with me, make jokes about the people that I like, about the people that about me, about you. It sounds like you're advocating for allowing people to come into Florida based on viewpoint, which I'm sure you don't actually believe in, so explain.
So we've already forgotten so quickly about what happened with the Dixie Chicks when they attacked President Bush. Remember people piling up Dixie Chick CDs and driving over them with their cars? This is no different. This is Jelly Roll trying to cater to some Hollywood elitist crowd. He forgets where his listener base is. It's the Bible Belt. Here this guy, you know, snuggles all over the president at the fight just a few months ago. You know, wants to be Mr. Cool Kid, but he wants to have his cake and eat it too. So, you know, go ahead and do what you want to do. I don't need Jelly Roll music on my device. And he comes out and he wants to triple down saying, well, you want to delete your music. And that's what you're seeing people do all over social media, is they're going and deleting Jelly Roll's music off their playlist. So again, look, it's no different. He made a business decision. His business decision was to trash the president. And in this part of the world, in my opinion, the president is still respected, revered, and appreciated. And I think he just totally misjudged and he decided to triple down. We'll go right ahead. I guarantee you the Southeast United States buys more country music than the West Coast does.
And as far as Dixie Chicks go, by the way, I thought the Dixie Chicks was unique because it was on foreign soil criticizing a president back home during war, if I remember correctly. And now we're during war, too. But as far as a business decision, agreed. It was dumb of him.
He's dumb.
But again, what bothered me about the tweet was it sounded like, based on viewpoint, is whether you're welcome in Florida or not, which, again, you're perfectly free to say whatever you want to say. I'm free to criticize you for criticizing Jelly Roll for criticizing the president, right? So,
of course, but I do think he had a misjudging calculation, and I think there's those out here in Northwest Florida, and not just me, that feel this way. I bet you there's more that have frustration with Jelly Roll than those that appreciating what he did.
No, I think that's probably accurate. Based on the likely demographic of the consumers of his music, you know, it's probably disproportionately conservative. And so, you know, is it a good business decision or not? Right. I mean, I think that's a fair observation.
And that's why I feel like the folks that I represent in the state.
One of the things that you and I have talked a lot about is social media. Meta comes out with this big settlement. Well, seems big, you know, $12 billion up to $17 billion if other social media companies will self-restrain in similar ways that they want to say they will with regards to kids. It seems like a big number, but it is over time. My question for you is when I read the details of what they want to do, I feel like it's reading the notes from a mass murderer on, you know, oh, you know, give me these rules and I won't be able to commit my murders anymore, when any rules written by the mass murderer are not going to be as robust as we as a society want them to be. And by analogy, you know, Facebook and Meta are the mass murderers when it comes to our kids in terms of what they're doing and what they're harming and so forth. So what's your take on this settlement?
I think the take is at least them. I think the biggest takeaway is them admitting that they have got a problem, okay? They're admitting, and otherwise they wouldn't be offering up these timeout solutions, these blocking the clocks, you know, the lack of push-up. It's obvious they know they've got a problem. But you know what? They still haven't gone to get treatment, okay? So now they're trying to do their own self-medication, saying, well, we're gonna fine ourselves or we'll agree to a settlement, essentially fining themselves, you know, $1.8 billion, whatever, over 10 years. Dude, that's $180 million a year. That's like smaller than the Escambia County budget. It's stupid. Mm. Okay? So, I mean, this is where they're trying to figure. I feel like we're going to have a major restructuring. And that's why I say the easiest way, just give it a Section 230. I was with a member of Congress, of all persons, a Democratic member for California this week. He came to me about a Section 230 bill. This is something that crosses all party lines because we all care about our kids. He loves the bill, and it's nice and simple. Repeal 230, and you know what? They'll have to be responsible for the content they're pushing out. They'll have to be responsible for when they try to be predators on our kids at 2 o'clock in the morning with push notifications that keep our kids up all night, that don't have them prepared for the next day at school because they've been wired looking at their devices. Don't get me started. What Meta did, yeah, thank you for at least admitting you've got a problem, but we've got a lot more work to do.
And this is one of those cases, you know, I've been pretty critical of James Uthmeyer, our attorney general, but this is a case where I think I actually side with him, where, you know, he said, I don't want your settlement money. I want to get a solution. I want to take you to court. I think we can get a lot more out of you and probably get better results because, you know, it's like when the cops, you know, come with us, sir. No, come with us, sir. No, hands on. Oh, okay. Now I'll come. Nope. Too late. You know, too late. No, we're past that. And you know, you're going in the car and it's going to be with cuffs.
And I don't want their money. You know what? Just change your policy.
Right. Right.
You've got a product and a content that people enjoy. It makes people's lives sometimes a lot easier just because of the things they're able to find out, because your content sometimes helps it with DIYs. You name it. Just don't be predators. Don't be knuckleheads. And that's what they're doing. They're being predatory knuckleheads. All they're thinking about is the greed of their bottom line, because their devices and the algorithms are so sticky, our kids can't resist it. It's a digital fentanyl.
The Ford class being re-engineered. President Trump has basically said you got to get rid of the electromagnetic propulsion system that they use on the catapults and go back to the old system of steam. The Ford was the first one to be built with this new system, and it definitely did have problems in the beginning. My understanding is that it's actually been worked out pretty effectively. And I could be wrong, but that's the way I understand it. You know, he wants to move the superstructure from its rearward orientation now to being more like what we think of on the Nimitz class. Again, my understanding is, A, that was done for reasons to create flight space on the flight deck, but also, B, the massive cost to re-engineer both of those things. And then, although apparently not quite official yet, the effort to rename it from the Doris Miller to the Trump, which is, you know, Doris Miller was this black guy who was awarded the Navy Cross for his heroism in Pearl Harbor. These all seem like very bad things, and the cost alone of the Ford class reengineering, I don't understand how this can make sense.
Well, again, I think this goes back to kind of how we started our whole conversation off today, is the president with leverage in responding to a set of circumstances. The Ford class, you know, next generation aircraft carrier, has so many amazing built-in characteristics. I mean, it's got thousands of less sailors on it, so the overall cost over 50 years is much less. But, you know, here, this is where, you know, some of the technology deployed with it, and the first time it's really been put on a significant stress test, shows where it's got some real deficiencies. So it's just kind of just throwing out those type of comments that somebody would say at the damn, you know, at the Waffle Houses. My goodness, you know what? We've been building carriers for almost a century, and we can't get this right with the newest class. So I think, again, he's throwing it out there. And what it makes people jump through hoops, it creates an urgency because, hey, the bureaucracy of the Pentagon, get things done over there, it is like there's a true culture that exists that I was here before Donald Trump, and I'm going to be here after Donald Trump. So the only way sometimes he gets a reaction that gets things moving is just basically trying to scrap whole current system idea technology for the one that works.
So, but we can agree that the Doris Miller thing is not a good look. Like, if he wants to have the Trump class of battleships, if they ever come to exist, and the first one be named after him, no problem. He made that thing from nothing, again, if it ever comes to be. But don't take away the Black Navy Cross recipient's name and put the Trump's name on there. Am I wrong?
Yeah. Well, again, I'm not as familiar. I'm familiar with the Dory Miller story. I'm not as familiar about those comments or the context that was brought up. Was that something that President Trump said? Was that something that somebody trying to suck up to President Trump said? Was that a post on the internet that went viral? So that part, I don't know the source.
Going to wait on it a little bit. Okay. All right. And last thing, $40 trillion. What the heck is $40 trillion? Yeah. Like, nobody knows what $40 trillion means except that our GDP is only right. $32 trillion.
Correct.
Neither party has ever yet really been willing to do anything about this. Does it matter? And are we going to do anything?
No, it does matter. It does matter. I think there's definitely inside the White House and the administration, to a certain degree, a lot of America. You go and you reflect on how the prosperity was of our country back in, you know, winter of 2019 and spring of 2024, COVID hit. I mean, I think we're still in such a struggle. We were on the right path then. Then you had this crazy stuff, COVID, rhyme or reason, wherever you think it came from, it destroyed small businesses. It put people out of work. It changed the culture of the workforce. I think the president is trying to force jumpstart of the economy to try to get money back into people's pockets in order to get us back into that battle rhythm of what we were. I think, you know, he's maybe trying to do something that is going to be hard to accomplish when he only has one term available to him. And it may be a little bit of a hoe before we see those type of dollars repatriating back into the revenues and coffers of the federal government to exchange, you know, the dynamics of our spending.
You know, I feel like a lot of times you and I are, it's a very friendly conversation. I feel like this is an unfriendly one because we're going to end on the worst note possible. You ready?
Go ahead.
FSU.
You've been a rare. I tell you, I think you've gotten more liberal on this call than I've ever dealt with. Go ahead. Whatever's coming out of your mouth probably won't surprise me. Go ahead.
FSU football.
Oh man, you know, I don't think that the team's still ready for prime time. I know it was an early game this year. You know, we should have beat that team by 30 points.
Yeah.
There was a lot of struggles. Again, this is, to me, is going back to the problems we have with NIL and the portal and our inability to do anything about it. The NCAA is useless. Congress right now, we're being held hostage in Congress to do anything about NIL and the portal because of the state of Texas. The state of Texas likes the status quo. So all you have to do is have a dozen Texas congressmen say, hey, I don't want to change anything regarding NIL, and the status quo stays the same. So now these coaches are being, to me, they're being undermined by these players that, man, I should have considered that offer going to XYZ because I could pick up another $5,000 or $1,500 or $500,000, but now I'm stuck with a season at Florida State. So, I mean, I think coaches really are overwhelmed with the environment they're in. And I think it's a no-win situation.
But at least the Argos won their opening game in Division One against the number 16 ranked team in the nation. That was awesome.
I tell you, the Argos and their win, if you've not looked at their Instagram here, I'm promoting social media, which I hate, but if you go look at their social media game this week that win, it is electrifying. I got chills just you bringing it up at me hearing about it. Nothing's coming in, and they're coming in off a win off of UNLV, so it's going to be interesting. That's a big game.
Oh, it's wonderful. It's a great day to be an Argos fan and to be a UWF dad. Jimmy Patronis, our congressman for Florida District 1. As always, Jimmy, thank you for the time. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks, pal. See you.